This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their five-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman. So here's the deal. This is just the harsh reality of what's going on there. It's not harsh, it's a good reality. It's just reality in the life that I'm back to. So I flew in Monday night, 3 a.m. I got home from Oklahoma. I went on this is the second time I went. It was this pig hunting trip with John Hudspeth, formerly of the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast on the network, Nate Roosevelt, Michigan Wild, Nick Otto, Huntivore, and Andrew Muntz from O2. You know, some of those guys retired their podcast. Some of them are still going. But we've done this annual hog hunting trip to Oklahoma. And I am physically exhausted, yet spiritually refreshed. What an awesome experience. So I'm tired, got my butt kicked, and I don't know if the audio is picking it up in the background or not. I am racing to get this episode edited so that way I can get dinner to these two knuckleheads in the background who are busy playing Mario on the Wii, and get them to baseball practice and do everything we've got to do as a family that I want to do. I've been looking forward to because I missed them while I was gone. But then I got to go back and do some of my day job and finish up on a couple things that are time sensitive because I skipped out and took a little bit of time to go hunting. But what an awesome trip it was. We shot 23 hogs and in one sit we killed 16. We had a herd of 40 some come in and man, we laid the hammer to them. Thinking there's a good chance that episode might launch on this podcast at some point here in the near future. If not, I'm going to direct you guys to the other shows on the network or off the network that it's probably going to drop to and you can listen to it. So thanks for tuning into this week. This week I got a podcast listener on the show, somebody I've been able to connect with and meet once or twice, and that's Michael Ortiz. Michael's a good dude, and we have a really well-versed conversation discussing just all aspects of hunting, from private land and managing and, you know, having, you know, private land hunting setups to public land hunting and grinding it that way and learning new challenges and facing new challenges, and then incorporating some buddies and having a camp atmosphere, so to speak, or having an atmosphere of friends and fellowship in hunting and really revolving around redefining success in what that looks like for our hunt. So guys, enjoy this episode. And before we do, quick shout out to our partners, Radix Hunting. Please go check out radixhunting.com and check out the gear they have to offer, specifically the Monarch Blind Series for this upcoming hunting season, this upcoming turkey season, cameras as well. Check out the gear they have to offer. Also, please check out, my goodness, I'm losing my train of thought here, Huntworth. Please check out Huntworth. Guys, I want to tell you right now, Durham pants, Sheldon hoodie, dynamite for turkey season. I really like multiple patterns. I rock the Disruption, but go to huntworthgear.com, check it out. Lastly, Little Mountain Outfitters. Go to littlemountainoutfitters.com and check out all they have to offer. Everything bow hunting, support local business. You could do it online and do it at Woodsman10. You get a code of 10% off if you use the code Woodsman10. Check it out. All right, that's all I got. I'm running out of steam. You guys are stinking noisy. Do you know that? Why are you so noisy? All right, that's enough. All right, have a good week, guys. Hope you have as good as mine. Will you listen to me for once in your stinking life? You are a meatball. Don't call me a meatball. You two are the meatballs. I don't want to hear it. No, you started it, you ding-dong. I'm trying to do something here. Will you knock it off? Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this week's show. This week, I am speaking with a listener, and that is Michael Ortiz. Thanks for joining us, Mike. How you doing on this fine Monday evening?
Not too bad. Just getting ready for some warmer weather.
I've been getting ready for warmer weather for quite a while, and it seems like I'm still getting ready for it. So I'm not quite sure how I feel about that.
We get that fall spring far too often here.
So as this one's recording, it's the end of March. This coming weekend, the last weekend in March, we're having a birthday party for my son. He's turning 4. And you have some family and stuff coming over, and I'm working on the basement. I'm like, it's going to be that cold this weekend that I'm actually thinking I better go cut some more firewood, because if not, my house is going to be frigid. And I'm sure some of my, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-laws, and my mom, and everybody else is going to be complaining how cold it is in my house. And who would have thought that would be the conversation leading into the first week of April, really?
Yeah, I feel like we see it all. We see it all here, like snow and turkey hunted in the snow in April, and then next day it could be 80 degrees.
Yeah, and there's definitely places it's worse than that, but there's been many times I've remembered going out the first week of turkey season and having, like, my cold weather archery hunting gear on. Like, it'd be 30 degrees in the mornings, and it's like, this is spring turkey? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I remember not that long ago. It was probably... I always travel down to Maryland every year to spring turkey hunt because they get that 2 weeks earlier than we are. And I think it was 3 years ago, on the second day there, we woke up to, because we just camp out on public, and we woke up to like 6 inches of snow on the ground. I was like, this is turkey season?
Well, hey, it gives you MRI on tracks and strut zones and stuff, although it probably melts off by noon at that point, but still.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, before we dive into a little bit more, I'd like the opportunity for you to introduce yourself to people who, you know, where are you from, what you get into, and, you know, tell a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Mike Ortiz. Lifelong hunter. I'm originally from, like, the Lehigh Valley area, and then got a job opportunity out here. I'm in Lebanon now. And I basically took the job because it came with 300 acres that I could manage and hunt. So that was a big bonus.
Yeah, that's usually a pretty good selling point.
Yeah, for me it was. But, yeah, I mean, always archery hunted. And just more recently, I would say, like, as the public land kick got big, I really took off in my hunting. You know, I have the 300 acres here, but I'm probably equally as much out on public. But that's just more for the adventure and just always learning.
Well, sure. And I think it's an interesting dynamic. Like, there's a lot of people that have been motivated by the push and the interest via, you know, media and such, and public land hunting is one of those. So I guess what captivated you in that area? Was it just the people are trying something different and it's a hard challenge, so I want to try something too? Or what kind of landed in you to dive into that world?
I think, you know, for a while people thought, like, oh, there's no deer on or public's hard, or there's no deer. And And I think, you know, a lot of those shows, like The Hunting Public, you got, you know, Bo Martonic, all those guys, I think kind of showed the public, like, hey, there's big deer everywhere. You just got to be willing to work for it. So I like working hard as far as hunting goes, well, in every aspect, but specifically in hunting. And I think I have a tight group of friends that we were just, like, looking for more adventure and add that, you know, that just makes hunting, because I think you can make hunting however, you know, fit the way that you want it to. And for us, that just happened to, the adventure of public land, finding deer, just kind of fit into what we were looking to get out of hunting.
Well, that's really cool. And I guess one of the backsides of that, and I think everybody has to look in the mirror and ask themselves, because I had to do this myself, is where is the line for what Mitchell wants to do versus being influenced and doing it because that's the flow that everybody else is going into? That's something I've had to say for myself. So, like, I don't know, how do you distinguish that? Like, how do you know this is something for you versus just trying to follow along with everybody else?
I think the biggest thing is just you got to try everything, and whatever works for you and what you enjoy doing. You know, if it's something that, like, for me personally, ground hunting was, like, one thing, you know, whether it's public, private, that I felt made me enjoy hunting that much more. So that's just something that I really took to. And, you know, for some people that's might be just hunting a private property, or, you know, going up in a tree stand and just sitting there to enjoy it. But for me, that, yeah, finding the things that work and fit your way of enjoying just being outside is, I think, an important part.
How do you think that new tactics and new challenges have molded you to the hunter that you are today and maybe improved you as a hunter?
Oh, I guess the newest thing would be, like, as we get into this light, like, mobile hunting gear, I think it encouraged me to try new things, hunt different ways. But it definitely, I would say, it got me out of my comfort zone of what I was comfortable doing, and then just learning from it. I think that, like, always wanting to learn from the new products out, new pieces of property. But a lot of that just kind of still continues to make me into the hunter I am.
Sure. And do you feel like some of the new things you've tried, new gear you've tried, like, as you've molded and grown, do you find things are making you more successful?
I'd like to think they are.
Sure.
No, I think every year I get into more, I would say, you know, whether I harvest a deer or not, but I would consider it more, every year it's been more and more successful, just because I'm learning new pieces. I'm more willing to go out, see a new piece of public, or try a new state, or, you know, things like that.
I love to try new places, and I have this conversation with my buddy all the time. You know, he's even more so than I am as far as exploring new places and, like, that drive to just go adventure. And like, we always say, there's too much ground, there's not enough time, and, like, I find myself getting stretched thin in that too, because let's face it, one of my goals all the time is to be successful in the side of, I'd like to fill some tags, and I've already put myself in situations where I go too far, I stretch myself too thin, and then I'm in the process of trying to learn new stuff and not spending time on the stuff I do know that could make me successful. And I guess sometimes, well, defining success is the first thing too. And like I just said in the beginning, like, at the end of the day, I still want to fill my tags and stuff, and I guess defining success could look different for some people. Maybe success isn't just filling a tag, it's being efficient at a certain aspect of hunting that might make you better over a long term. So I guess maybe the question I should ask you, Mike, is, like, how do you view success when you go into a hunting season?
For me, it's just getting, like, if I can get an opportunity, you know, whether I capitalize or not, because then I feel like I I won. You know what I mean? That's success to me. Getting an opportunity, you know, to ideally on a, you know, a nice buck. I mean, but yeah, that would be success. I mean, I've definitely had some up years and down years, and I'm starting to hone in now a little bit. Like, so I did a lot of the same thing too. I tried all these different places and things, and I almost felt like it hindered me a little bit to the point where more recently I just had a conversation with my buddies the other day about, you know, let's, you know, we go to all these different like places and we're always like, hey, let's go try this and that. But, and we always find deer. We were like, let's pick a, you know, a chunk of public and say, let's focus our time there this season and see. So that's something I'm actually going to try this coming season is really, you know, I have a piece of public relatively close to me that I'm going to try putting a couple cameras out and spending. Now, I've shot deer there before and I spend time there, but this year I think I'm going to try and spend most of my time there, which is tough. I also have a four-year-old and a newborn, so it makes it tough to get out.
But. Yeah, time is a challenge in that regard. I can echo that because I experienced the same thing. You know, I think about it with my job all the time. Like, you know, one of my jobs as a consultant is really trying to take the complex and turn it into something simple that you can either measure or you can implement. And I think it's easy, like in the world of agriculture, where you can see products, you can see practices, you might want to try things, you know, products and, you know, equipment and changes and management changes. And, you know, you can get really lost in the advancements. But if you don't have the context and the foundation to it, I think you can easily get yourself lost. I mean, like you can spread yourself thin. You're trying to do a little of this, a little of that. And I really think honing down and scaling back 30,000 feet and then zooming in on the fine tune of like, okay, what is my goal? Where's my weak spots? And then what am I going to do that I can actually change? Because if you say, well, I want to go and I want to shoot a mature whitetail on the ground with a bow on public land, all this stuff, I say, okay, well, have you ever shot a deer on the ground with the bow, period? Have you ever even shot a mature buck? You know, there's like, I think a lot of us, myself included, can want to do all these certain things. And I think that's sometimes where we get influenced, right? We get influenced like, well, so-and-so is doing things that it's drastically different, but they're doing five things different than me. And I've never even shot a deer off the ground with my bow. So like, I think incrementally and then certain aspects on it, just like in a way, like not biting off more than we can chew, I guess, is where I get. And I think a lot of us do that. I'm guilty of that. More than once, I have found myself just trying to do too much. And that was really bad for me when I started to see time dwindle. Like I was taking on more, and then got married and had kids. And I was still trying to do all the same stuff, but I had a fraction of the time compared to where I used to. And sometimes you got to go back to the drawing board to make life, to make it work in a way that works for your life, I guess. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I think I'm making sense.
Yeah, no, that makes, because, yeah, I go through the same things. I mean, even, so success, like you were going back to the topic of success. For me, it was like, okay, now that my kid's four, I want to get him out a little bit. So that's become more important to me, you know, rather than me going out and shooting a deer, you know, on public or here at the farm. So it kind of just changed different things I'm doing. So yeah, I do a little bit of scouting on public, but now I also am slowly setting my farm up to where it's easy to take, you know, my kids out, and my buddy brings his kids here, because that's probably top priority for us, because it's just growing. You know, we want to see the sport survive, and so getting our kids into hunting is extremely important. So that this year, actually, I shot my archery buck with my four-year-old, and we had a box blind on a clover plot. So here at the farm on private land, but that was, to me, that was as big of a success as you could really ask for.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've done that a lot in my life, be able to go on box blinds and food plots and stuff. And, you know, the past 3 years, I've done some different stuff. I shot a buck on a brand new piece of private that I never had before. And I didn't have any stands hung. I just kind of scouted and hunted it, and other people were hunting it, and I did a hanging hunt, shot a buck, and then, you know, the last 2 years I shot a buck on public land, and, you know, I've done all that stuff, and I'm back to the same thing where I'm actually looking at getting materials and trying to build a blind at one of the places that I have, just because the same reason. I thought, what an awesome way to get a young kid exposed. And sure, it's a cushy way to get them started, but I think it's easier to get kids that age started and keep them interested. And you know, people can make fun of it all they want. At the end of the day, I don't care. I don't really care what anybody thinks. It's something that I enjoy and is fun for me, and it's for me to spend time with my kids. And if that's not the cool macho way to do something, you know, I don't really care. And I think that brings me to another point too. You know, you were talking about what's important to you is seeing the sport grow and getting kids involved and stuff. You know, one of the things that I think is tearing us apart is ourselves. You know, a lot of the time we find ways as hunters to divide ourselves. So, I mean, very broad, generic question, Mike, but like from your point of view, where do you see some of the biggest divisions in the hunting community?
I think to start, it's a loaded question. I think a big thing has to do, you know, the media that we're consuming is, I think it's a great learning, it's a place to go and learn, but at the same time, it's making, I would say, hunters almost be a little bit selfish, as in they want to go out, you know, it's become more about me killing a big buck or me, you know, people, I'm not saying you got to go share your pins with, you know, everyone and their brother, but I think it's important to have a group of guys or bring new hunters in and to share moments with out in the woods, to share, you know, all that stuff, because that's what's, for me, that's the most exciting. I mean, I think some of my most memorable hunts are getting a new buddy into hunting, you know, whether it'd be shooting his first turkey or his first deer, and make it less about me going out. I got to go out and kill, you know, the biggest buck, and try and get rid of that jealousy factor of, oh, that guy just killed one over there. I mean, just be excited for everyone. You know, the more people we have on public, you know, the more voices we have to protect our public lands. So that's a big deal.
I think one of the biggest things too, Layton, to your point there, as we make it more about ourselves and you continue to pursue more, sometimes it's okay to just be satisfied. And I think we're in a world of where we're never satisfied. And you tell that over to the hunting. Like, let's face it, there's different styles and different interests within hunting. So let's just divide. You can divide it however you want, private versus public. Let's just do it from the angle of weapons, right? You got archery season, and that's a community in of itself, and you got rifle season, and here in Pennsylvania our late season is flintlock. You've got three different interest groups right there just in the deer hunting. You don't even get into the other species and the breakdowns of those seasons. But you find yourself all the time where, as an archery hunter, you hear people talking about more. Well, why can't we have the season go longer? Or why can't, you know, we impact, or why can't we reduce the rifle season or push it later? Or do, because it's making it a disadvantage for me as an archery hunter. I they're shooting more buck in rifle season, so therefore we should reduce it or whatever. Or I want a longer season. And then the flip side, rifle season, you know. Guys often will say, well, archery hunters hunt too much. They got too much season. Why can't we have more season? There's all these things within seasons I think people can nitpick. And when you think about it, we've got a lot of opportunity. I mean, archery season goes 7 weeks. You know, if you can't get it done in 7 weeks, it wasn't meant to be. Just be satisfied you had 7 whole weeks to go archery hunting. And rifle hunters had 2 whole weeks. And 2 weeks with a rifle, there's a lot of opportunity you can take with a weapon that can shoot a couple hundred yards. And, you know, it's truly called the equalizer, because it levels the playing field very much so when you compare it to a bow. And then, the flintlock. You know, like, we fight so much about little stupid things. In all reality, We have a lot of opportunity, and just enjoy it. And why can't we rejoice in the fact that we have our opportunity, make the most of it, and be satisfied with it? And I don't know. That's a tough one, because sometimes wanting more or better isn't a bad thing, but there's a line somewhere, and I don't know where to draw it, and I don't know that I want to be the one to draw it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I always say, you know, I respect the Pennsylvania Game Commission. I think they do a good job creating opportunities. I mean, even in the last, let's just say the last 5 years, the amount of opportunities that we've added is tremendous. Mm. I think that a big thing is the end goal. So you get a lot of people, want less archery or less rifle or this or that. I think the end goal is the same for everyone. Wants to see a healthy herd of deer, wants to go out and have opportunities. So I think that's one thing that we can all agree, like, hey, let's agree that that's something that we all want to see. So where the divide comes in, I think, is more really comes down to what their opinion of a healthy population of deer. I ran into a guy on Public actually this past weekend. We were out shed hunting, and I won't go into like the Monday opener thing. I mean, he had his opinions, but we were just chatting back and forth, and he would say, I saw, back in the day we used to see 50, 60 deer here, in one sit. And I was just pointing out that, it's not always the most healthy thing to see endless amounts of deer. There at some point, like a herd health has to matter. But one thing I think is that what he wants is the same thing that I want. He wants to go out and be able to see bucks, but he just felt that more deer would meant it's healthy. But sometimes that's just not the case. And I think the Game Commission has a heck of a time trying to draw that line, like you said.
Well, it's a tough line to draw, and you've got so many different experiences and perspectives. And I'm still going to always say, regardless of those experiences and perspectives, is whenever somebody's interest is taking into account emotion and not research and science, I have a question about that. Now, is research and science always accurate? No. How many times have we had stuff that was quote-unquote science fact, and then it kind of changed and molded over time? It's because it's research and we're adapting. I don't know that I agree with all of the research and the recommendations from the research based off of CWD, for instance. But at the same time, I support that research. I want to know more about that research to make good decisions that are healthy. Do I always agree with the immediate response? No. But just because we've seen, I used to have this argument with my grandfather all the time when he'd talk about the same thing, seeing 50, 60 deer in northern Pennsylvania in the big woods and stuff, and, how could you tell me that wasn't a healthy deer herd? I was like, well, I wasn't part of the time, but I do know how much a deer eats, and I do know the vegetation that is in the woods, and I do know that there's a carrying capacity, and that changes over time, and you're going to get these boom and busts, and that's all, research-oriented. And I think sometimes we got to look past ourselves in our own, and I'm guilty of it, man. There's so many times I let my own self-interest and ego reflect decisions and actions of myself. But at the end of the day, there's got to be common ground. And I don't know where the line is. I think it's just having a little bit of humility in some cases. I don't know. How do you find humility in hunting?
Yeah, that's a tough thing. I mean, I think you have to base, you have to support the Game Commission in following research, because really, what else do you have to go off of? I mean, you can't go sit out in the woods, pick a piece, go sit out there and say, oh, I didn't see any deer. This place must have no deer. It's just not the way that these decisions should be made. And I think a lot of people, including myself, are guilty of doing that. So we have to support the science-based decisions that come out, whether we agree with them or not. But, yeah, I think that the research that's done is usually pretty good. So to support that is important.
You have to think about, too, I mean, I forget often about how the system works a lot. So you've got a lot of folks in the game commission that, you know, I've had them on the show. I've interviewed a lot of people, and I've been fortunate enough to meet a lot of really, really cool people, and they're level-headed, like-minded people like you and I, Mike, and they love this. They want to see the best of it, and they're working their tail off to make it as best they can. However, within the government system that we have...
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
You're not always going to have good eggs. Sometimes you got bad eggs, and sometimes you have people within legislatures that make decisions that aren't for the best for the critter. Sometimes they're making it for the best of financial decisions, or sometimes it's made by whatever self-interest or specific interest group is yelling the loudest. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of deal. That happens. And I think a lot of the time when stuff happens that is negative, which it's happened over the years, right away it's the game commission's bad. And that's not always the case. Sometimes the game commission might have a hand in it, but you know, they're not always the one to point the finger. And I think being involved is important. I'm probably not as involved as I should be in many cases. I don't know. It's a wonky system, and it's a messy system. So I guess what I'm in my rambling spiel that I'm thinking about this, I think it's probably important to... know where you stand and maybe not overstep your knowledge or your boundaries. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep, which right now there's a bunch of things going on, but keeping legislation as far away from decision making on wildlife and habitat as we can is pretty important, to let the game commission hire biologists make those educated decisions. Versus, like, I'm in no position to say what should be done. You know, I can give my opinion on certain pieces to buddies and whatnot, but, you know, they put, Game Commission biologists put in a lot of work into their field. I mean, it's their job. It's what they get paid to do.
So another aspect of, you know, we talked about division in growing the sport, and that definitely doesn't help us grow. And the other way is just, the next generation. You talked about, you know, shooting your buck this past year with your son. And you know, there's a lot of dads out there that are doing their hardest to get their sons out and get them involved and stuff. But at the same time, I mean, I think across the country, for the most part, license sales are going down. There's less and less interest. And I don't know where that starts to happen. Is it me as a dad? Is it just society? Is it, you know, why is it, and is there a way to slow that down a little bit?
Yeah, I think a big thing is, like, with the kids. So, for example, the guy that I met on public this past week, you know, he said, we had talked about how do we get more people in, and he was like, I just think they need to, the more deer they see, it's going to get kids involved. But I think a lot of that responsibility falls on us as fathers, as mentors, just to show them what is important. And you have to be, at the end of the day, if you're not that passionate about hunting and you just go out here and there, it's going to be tough to bring other people into the sport. For me, it's my only, you know, one of my only passions is just being in the outdoors and getting my kids out there. But yeah, that falls on the responsibility of all hunters is to grow that sport, not, you know, the Game Commission can only give us these opportunities to hunt, but as far as getting people involved, I mean, you know, the group of, you know, obviously as a father, it's my responsibility to get my kid out there, and I think I'm doing an okay job. He loves it. I mean, as much as a four-year-old can, before he goes on to his superhero toys. But the group of friends that I hunt with actually didn't grow up. I grew up hunting since, you know, watching my dad, waiting until I was 12. Couldn't wait to get out there. But now the group of guys that I hunt with, I actually got them into hunting. And it's become like, that's one of the best parts of, I feel, my hunting career. That's like my biggest hunting success, is getting a group of guys to be that passionate about hunting. So that it definitely falls on the responsibility of Pennsylvania hunters to do that, to get more people involved, show them why we love to do what we do.
And here's another thing that I think we need to keep in mind is, as you get newer, later onset hunters, their interests and their thought process is probably a lot different than yours as somebody who grew up hunting and waiting. So, like, the things we want and desire might be a little bit different than somebody as a late onset hunter. But just because there's differences between those two groups of people doesn't mean there needs to be division. There needs to be compromise. It's funny. We just listened to in church on Sunday. There was our pastor was going through going through unity and being unified as a church body, and they were talking about how, you know, there's certain things that we can't budge on. We can't budge on the doctrine. We can't budge on the real truths. But we shouldn't be divided as a church because we don't get our way when we vote for what color the carpet is going to be in the men's bathroom. Like, that in no way, shape, or form should that create strife and division. We could take that same concept into hunting. You know, I want there to be a healthy deer population, and health is based off of a lot of different metrics. And if my decision, if we want to make a decision that won't impact the health of a herd, and it's just kind of a nuance. Like for instance, the opening day of deer season for rifle season. Is there any scientific, biological reason that's going to deteriorate the quality of the deer herd by which day it starts on? Well, maybe at a certain point, but the changes that we're talking about within a Saturday to Monday, man, if we're going to start to hate each other because of which day the day starts on between a three-day window, we got bigger problems than that. Like, at the end of the day, if I don't get my way, it's still not changing anything in the big picture.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, obviously the number one divisive thing, I feel like, right now.
It is.
And it's...
So it's, what do you have? If Mike had it his way, what would you pick?
I prefer the Saturday, but I think I'm going to hunt whether it was Monday. I'm pretty fortunate, but there's a lot of people who aren't fortunate to be able to move their schedules and do this and that. But what I feel that if it allows more people to get out there, which I think there's no debate, I don't think on any side, that the Saturday clearly allows more people to get out. I'm not saying that. Maybe it didn't bump license sales like crazy, but it certainly allows more people to get out. And then there's people always say that it got away from camp life. Our camp actually started in 2018 and grew tremendously with that Saturday. So for me, I don't see that. I think camp life was already on a downward trend, but I mean, again, that falls on us as hunters to start those traditions back again and get those, whether it's Saturday, Monday, or Wednesday. I don't think it matters. I think it matters about just getting a group of guys out there, girls, kids, get them out there hunting and start your own traditions and get out there. I think the Saturday allows that a little bit more.
Sure. And I don't think I disagree with anything you just said, but I'll share you my opinion. I preferred the Monday opener, and the reason I prefer the Monday opener was for a lot of the old traditional reasons. And the way I've looked at opportunity is the same thing I said earlier. Like, we've got 7 weeks of archery season. We've legalized crossbows, which the entryway from for bow hunting is a completely different ballgame than it used to be. Mm-hmm. So we've got opportunity there. And whether it falls on a Saturday or Monday, maybe there is some differences in who can get out opening day. And I can sympathize with that a little bit. But I've also believed that in life, we have opportunities to set our priorities straight. And sometimes, like, if you want to make it happen, you'll make it happen. And if you can't make it happen, there's still plenty of other opportunity before that and after that. And the opening day shouldn't dictate that. But here's my point. I have my little set, and that's just because that's what I was used to, right? I was used to doing that. I didn't mind it. You prefer the Saturday opener. But guess what? We have a Saturday opener, and I still go out. And I've adapted, and I've been okay. And I'm definitely not going to say that, you know, Mike's this, that, and the other thing, because he thinks that. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It's my opinion, but it my opinion in the grand scheme of things doesn't matter. It's been done. It's been set. Move on. Adapt. Adjust accordingly. Make your hunting season as worthwhile. Because Mike brought it up, and he said it best. It starts with getting a group together, making it happen, and making it work. I mean, my favorite hunt of the year doesn't take place on opening day. My favorite hunt of the year takes place the end of the first week. Why? Because we make it a point that that's when we're going to get together, and that's when we're going to do it. So you do that opening day, you do it the first Monday, you do it the first Friday, you do it the middle of the second Tuesday, whatever. Just and make the most of it. But don't make a mountain out of a molehill over little things that don't have a big – because – I don't think we're going to have an impact on the quality of the deer herd if it starts from Saturday to Monday. And that's just one example. There's a lot of examples that I think we could probably talk into. And we'd be beating a dead horse, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think, like you said, prioritize. Like, at some point, though, we as hunters have to prioritize, you know. I do see that aspect of it. Prioritize what's important to you. If it's important that you get out, if it were Monday, you know, we do have that responsibility to do that. But yeah, actually my favorite day of the year to hunt is not the opening day. It's probably the second week, you know, cause we get a bunch of guys together. We put on drives. We just get together and make a weekend of it. But those are the fun hunts. Those are the ones that matter. I think a lot of people would enjoy hunting more if they would get away from the me thought of I have to kill a deer and go find a new buddy, take them hunting, and I really feel like that would change how you view hunting, because it's a crazy feeling to get someone new into hunting and have them harvest their first deer. I mean, that is, there's really, in my opinion, there's nothing better than that.
Mike, you hit the nail on the head, and you said it earlier, and you said it a second time, and that's it. When you stop making it about yourself, and don't get me wrong, I make it about myself all the time. I do. But at the same time, when you can have little moments, little glimmers of not making it about yourself and saying, well, you know what? I'd prefer it on Monday, but you know what? If Mike's working his tail off with his job and he's got an easier time getting out to go on Saturday and it's going to make him more successful, you know what? Good for him. I'm going to adapt myself to try to make my schedule accordingly and make the best of it. But if it's going to help him, good. I want to support him in that. And that's just one crude way of saying it. Now, you talked about getting new people into hunting and then going out and maybe doing drives the second week of deer season. You're taking that approach of, we're doing this together and it's not about me. I want to see them get something. And that's not a hunting thing. That's a personal thing. And not everybody's there. I mean, we all mature at a different stage of life. And sometimes I've been with men that are 60 years old that don't have that philosophy. And this isn't just hunting. This is life. This is anything in general with life. But for me personally, it's humbled me in ways where I can try to slow down and think about what's better for somebody else. It's made other aspects of my life better. It's made hunting better. It's made my marriage better. It's made my job better in many ways and shapes and form. And do I get it right all the time? No, but at least it's a common ground, because if I have the mentality that if I can see Mike win, I win, we both won.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one, if you have, I don't know, if have you ever been out west hunting elk or any other?
Yeah, I went one time, 2019, I got to go elk hunting. That was a neat experience.
I think if you go, if you ever, anybody goes out with a group of friends, public land elk hunting, there's no better feeling. I mean, just like talk about, you have to be all on the same page, wanting the best for your buddy. So we went out, I guess it was 2 years ago, to Colorado, just did OTC. It was the last year of OTC. And there was four of us, and three of us had tags. And it was, we never even, you know, we had a 24-hour car ride there, and not once did who's shooting come up. I mean, it was never, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to flip a coin. It literally, the way it worked out is whoever just happened to be in the position to shoot. So we would constantly just be like, oh, I'm in the front. And my buddy ended up killing a 4x4. And I'm telling you, I felt like I shot that elk.
Yeah.
I mean, that is still to this day. I mean, he says it all the time. He's like, no, this is a team effort. And I think that mentality is going to take you to new heights in hunting, in life. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, that... anyone gets the opportunity to do a hunt like that, even in Pennsylvania, go take a couple buddies out and have no goal of I'm going to try and shoot, you know, the biggest buck. Just go hunting together. I mean, it's going to change the way that people view their own life and hunting aspirations.
My brother-in-law's dad, Rob, I've had him on the podcast a few times, and he said this many times, and it has really echoed with me. He said, when you hunt with people and the response is, hey, how'd you do when you went up to deer camp? Or how'd you do when you went out elk hunting? And the response is, we did great. We got a bull, or we shot two buck. Yeah. That echoes a win. But when it becomes, yeah, I shot a buck. We did a drive. I shot a buck. Or you know, that's like the entryway to the bickering between I, me, that sort of thing. And you know, if that's where you're at, okay. But don't put yourself in a position where you could, you know, hurt somebody, because I've seen that happen. And that's where you've seen a lot of camps break up and stuff. Like I've fortunately never experienced it, but I've heard so many horror stories of guys doing drives in Pennsylvania with a group, and you go to set a drive up, and it's a historic drive, and a lot of guys know it, and they're fighting over who sits where in a drive, because historically this is a place, you know, it's a terrain spot that, you know, game comes out, and they're going to bicker and fight, and, you know, I don't want to be a drive, I'm going to sit right here, or I'm, you know, so-and-so's going to sit here, because, you know, this and that, and that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
That's one aspect of hunting. You can talk about that in any way, shape, and form. Think about it in your daily job. You know, if you're going to orient your daily schedule to revolve around you, and it's going to screw your coworkers, it's going to screw the people that you work with. I get it that, you know, sometimes people don't want to go to work, and they want to talk negative about their job. They want to talk about, you know, people drive them nuts. But seriously, if we have the mentality of how can I see them succeed and it will make me succeed, how can you lose? And you can take that in life any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, in the job aspect, it makes, you know, if you're lifting other people up, you're all winning. And it just translates 100% to hunting. I mean, just we make this joke about the group of guys that I hunt with. If someone shoots a deer, he's like, I'm not shooting this for me. This is for us. But when we go out opening day and someone shoots one, I mean, we have a group of like seven guys. I mean, if someone shoots one, everyone gets down. We go, we help them cut it up. You know, we pack our deer out, you know, on frame packs, and that's, I mean, there is nothing better than packing deer out together with a group of buddies. I mean, it's absolutely, like, especially in my opinion, the Pennsylvania woods, there's no better place to do that.
Well, I don't have a large sample size of other places to do it, but I know it's no matter which way you cut it, doing it together is definitely more fun than when you do it alone. And don't get me wrong, there's definitely some fun. I enjoy solitude. I enjoy the times where I can be alone. You know, it's just me, the woods, the game, the challenge. You know, it's a time where some, you know, hopefully I'm not so hyper focused on deer, and I can slow down and I can just thank the good Lord and being in a situation that I'm thankful to be here and enjoy. There's definitely some important things about having the solitude, but at the same time, my biggest memories, my most memorable experiences in the woods, if I was going to start telling hunting stories and this and that, almost every time it involves my friends, my family, the people who helped me. Sometimes that was bow hunting. Sometimes that was me going out in a deer stand and shooting a buck on my own. But at the same time, like I'll use the buck that I shot a couple years ago, the one I mentioned earlier. Yeah, I went in by myself that day, tree stand on my back, did a hanging hunt, and shot a buck. But I scouted it with my buddy. We communicated all the time. He ran cameras. We shared information. The wind was good. I had an opportunity, and he was the one that said, I think you should go and hunt over here. This is where I was seeing some good sign. And I did. So I took it. So even though I shot that buck, it's not just my buck. It's our buck. Like, we did that. And he came for the recovery and helped me drag that deer out and bring it back and help me get it all washed out and get the ice in it because it was hot that time. Like, that was the cool part about the story. If none of that was there, you know, a lot of the deer that I have shot that were just me and nothing else, I forgot about them.
Yeah, you're always going to, I mean, if you hunt enough and you're passionate enough, you know, your buddies can't go with you every time. It's just not. And you're always going to get those, solitude hunts where it's just you in the woods. Throughout every season, I would say probably half the time I'm by myself. But it, like you said, you're never really by yourself. Your buddies helped you scout it or you know, even just learning. I mean, there's always, if you just remember that when you're out there doing those things by yourself, I think even just that makes it that much sweeter.
You know, I don't think I've ever done a podcast with somebody that we thought that solo was the way to go. And I'm not saying you have to always hunt with people, but I'm saying fellowship is a healthy thing. And when you have healthy fellowship and you do things together and you have this like-minded spirit of trying to be, you know, beneficial for all, you know, I just feel like it has allowed me to excel. More so than the times where I've been self-interested and hyper-focused on what I want and brought other people down with me. And I think that's been the biggest thing I've taken away from this conversation amongst others is doing it with people in any way, shape, or form or having... how many times do you talk about people going archery hunting, but you still have a group text and you're texting your buddies and sharing information and stuff like... Yeah. There's a camaraderie aspect, which makes me say that the whole hunting thing isn't what we're after. Like, all of us that are driving and like, driven, and, oh, I'm so ate up with hunting. That's just the surface. That it's way more than that. Like, anybody who says that they're a big buck, solo endeavor, adventurist, you know, maybe they are to some degree, but there's something more to the core than just going out and being successful at filling tags, whatever it is. There's something bigger behind that. And I think a lot of it comes to fellowship and companionship.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's really what we're after. I mean, even if you are that solo endeavor, shoot a big buck, I mean, nobody's not coming back and sharing that story. I mean, you're coming back and you're sharing that story with buddies and this and that. So, and I think that at the end of the day, that's how we get more people. You know, that's how we get more license sales. I think you just make it more about fellowship. You know, yes, it's about hunting and you know, like you said, that's just the surface, but there's more to it than just going out there.
Well, and we can even flip this, Mike. Think about, I've thought about people in this regard. Like, there are people who are so focused on that in themselves. And I have to ask the question, and I don't know the answer for the people that come to my mind, but are they truly happy? Have they found true joy in their life? And sometimes they may say that hunting brings them joy, but I think we all got to have a pretty hard look in the mirror sometimes and ask us, am I truly joyful? Am I truly happy? Does my life reflect happiness and joy in the way that I handle myself and carry out my daily life? And sometimes I think when the focus is me, I don't know that there is. Even if you are successful at reading signs, shooting big deer, getting on big deer consistently, you know, there are people that shoot big deer and don't say a word, and it's a self-endeavored thing. I would just question, and I have experiences in my life that question this, are they joyous? I can't answer that for them, but I know this topic has made me as a man look in the mirror and ask myself, is what I'm doing truly making me happy?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely people out there that you always hear people who don't, you know, go out there, they always want to hunt by themselves. And that's, if that's what is, like you said, if that's what they feel, you know, is the best part of hunting for them, that's great. I'm happy for them. But I would challenge that person to just get, like I said before, get one person into hunting, take them out, and tell me how you feel after that. Because that is, like I said, it's just a life-changing moment to be able to do that.
You know, I hope I get to experience that with my kids too, because I've heard many stories of saying how dads and, you know, mentors taking a kid out, how they were more excited for them shooting it than they would have been. Like, I can't wait to experience that, because I think it is a... it's not just something on the surface of just being successful and shooting something. There's something to that aspect of taking people, helping people, and seeing people succeed. And that's a simple, you know, simple example of taking kids. But it's bigger than that, and there's a lot of different tail-offs with that.
Yeah, I mean, having kids, I think, is a totally different... it's just changed. Yeah, taking them out is... I hate to wish away time, but at the same time, I mean, you have a four-year-old as well, so it's like, you know, you don't want to ever wish away time with your kids. But I can't wait for that time where, you know, I get to not be the one shooting, and I'm, you know, he's using all the things that we've gone out and learned, and I get to watch him shoot. I'm sure that time will come, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. But for now, taking him with me is very fulfilling.
Very cool. Mike, this has been a fun conversation. I appreciate you coming on and just sharing some of your experiences and the things that you've witnessed over time and where you continue to pursue. I'm glad that you kind of shared some of those things, you know, the challenges you faced, the things you've tried to do to improve yourself. But at the end of the day, just at the core, doing things that are fun and fulfilling. So appreciate your time. Mike, best of luck this season. You're going to spend some time turkey hunting this spring?
Yeah, I got a 5-day trip planned to New York turkey hunting, and then PA is usually my toughest, just because with my job I work 7 days a week and it's always in the mornings. So, but I like to allocate 5 days to usually go out of state, whether that be Maryland, New York, but I'll definitely be out in the turkey woods. But yeah, thanks for having me on, man. It was a great conversation.
Absolutely. Best of luck, Mike. Thanks again.
Thank you.